For those that are just joining us, we'll try it again. We made two starts with our show this morning. I apologize for that. But the issue is so important and so critical, we have to keep rolling with it. We're talking about the Los Angeles Police Department. We're talking about issues of reform. And my special guest, former LAPD Chief Bernard Parks, who better to talk about the issue of reform, the pace of reform, speed of reform, types of reform, reforms that have been mandated, all of these things. We got into a little bit of that with Chief Parks. Chief Parks, are you there?
I'm here, yes.
Okay, let's try it again. I was telling Bernie what happened was before we had some callers and listeners, and they're talking at the same time. That was the problem. We didn't mute them. They're gone now. Let's pick it up, Chief Parks, where we stopped before. There were two areas that you were talking about of concern. One, the stops, pretextual stops, and the other, officer discipline. I know you were on, these were major issues of concern with you during your tenure as a LAPD chief, and they still are continuing issues. On the stops, when I hear that, what I hear is racial profiling, the big concern about that. More specifically, are young, primarily young African-American males and Hispanic males being disproportionately stopped? Oftentimes, no reason, just because of, quote-unquote, they're black and Hispanic. That's been a major issue, along with many of the others which you walked through. But, Chief, let's circle back on that. You talk about the stops and discipline. At this point in time, as you're looking at the department, your thoughts about both, has sufficient progress been made that we can say that the problems of the past in those areas are, if not behind us, at least receding in importance?
I think what disturbs me about the stops is that just recently the commission had to put out a policy about pretext stops, which the first question I would have is, when did the department stop using probable cause as a standard? It's been a standard for as long as I was on the department, and all of a sudden they had to put something out that said pretextual stops were not appropriate, and you say, well, when did the department move away from that, particularly when there was such fanfare about getting out of the consent decree, which was one of the major elements in the consent decree about how people were being treated in the public. And so that's one that seems to have been under the radar and not given a lot of attention. As to how over time that particular standard was diminished or ignored to get to the point of saying we're in pretextual stops, which at one point was viewed, at least in the east part of New York, that these were unconstitutional kinds of stops. And so that's something that needs to be addressed and determine how did the department get to this point and how did it slip to the point that the commission had to take that action. On the issue of discipline, I think that almost every study I've ever read talks about or identified that when you put civilians into the discipline system, often the outcome is less than what people expected, and that there would be less punishment, less understanding of what the seriousness of an officer's actions. And yet a charter amendment was floated by elected officials in the union to basically diminish the chief's power to discipline. So now officers have the ability to go to an all-civilian board, and no one can hold them accountable because they're not employed. They are basically people that get paid to come in and listen to a hearing with no background as to what the community's concerns are, or no background as to what the seriousness of this misconduct. And there was an article recently that reflected that almost 60 or 70 cases that the chief has recommended more serious misconduct penalties had been reduced. And so if you're going to hold the chief, the charter, so says that the chief is the primary responsibility for discipline, if you're going to hold him or her responsible for administering discipline on the department, then how do you give a civilian board the ability to overrule that particular position? And so those are things that need to be looked at into how did we get here, particularly when there is significant amount of literature that reflects that that would have been a wrong-headed decision to move in that direction.
If you're just joining us on the Earl of R.A. Hutchinson Show, my special guest is former LAPD Chief Bernard Parks and former L.A. City Council person Bernard Parks. We're talking about the LAPD reform going forward, what that means, and also what triggered this is we have the application, I guess you can put it that way, for a reappointment of the current LAPD Chief Michelle Moore. He served he's wrapping up a five-year term, and now, of course, mandated under reform provisions, possibly a second term. It's up to the police commission, and it's up to the mayor to make that decision. One of the areas, Chief Parks, that has always been a great deal of concern, in addition to discipline, civilian complaints, how they're handled, racial profiling, pretextual stops. But one of the major areas, in fact, if the greatest area, the use of force, more specifically, the use of deadly force, and even more specifically, the overuse, excessive force. Your thoughts on that in terms of, well, let me walk it back one second. The LAPD, back in the day anyway, going back in time, the big knock is they kill a lot of people. They shoot a lot of people under questionable circumstances. So the issue of deadly force, when it's used, when it's appropriate, when not, has always been a hot button issue. Your assessment of the department today, Chief, on that issue of the use of force, how much progress has been made to de-escalate in terms of the use of force within the department?
Well, I think there's been a lot of conversation about it. But one of the things that, and I'm just picking up articles as they come through the paper, I've been somewhat surprised at the number of shootings that have occurred when an individual might have what appears to be a sharp object or a knife, and they're a distance away, and yet we're using deadly force against them. Those are things that I looked at very critically and often found that the shooting would be out of policy if there was sufficient distance between the suspect and the officer, or there was the ability for the officer to keep cover, and because a bladed instrument can harm you often at a distance, you'd have to be in close proximity, which now puts into play whether the officers are using proper tactics in the sense of using the proper cover that may be available or keeping a distance from someone. So that's been an area that I've been somewhat surprised as to the use of deadly force on bladed instruments and sometimes instruments that are not a knife, but yet it's an instrument that officers have found to be what they thought was deadly force and it wasn't. So I think that one of the things that I found in dealing with use of force is that often most of the attention is given when an officer fires their weapon at someone. But I think the use of force is really dealt with realistically on the lower level, all the way from you taking physical contact with someone, all the way up well before you have to use deadly force. And you pay particularly attention to their tactics, because the tactics will get officers in trouble by them not paying attention to distance and also working as a team or giving out instructions so everyone's aware of what's going on. And that also can occur in a deadly force situation, how many times many officers will shoot because there's no fire control. And so I think that if you don't pay attention to the hand-to-hand combat, the use of a baton, the use of other kinds of force, much on the more minimal level, you bosses will use the same bad tactics and the same poor judgment when they're using deadly force. So you can't wait until a deadly force situation and put all the emphasis on what the officer did or didn't do, because you're allowing them to believe that what they do on the minor uses of force is an appropriate way to handle it. And so I think you got to be as critical as to the minor use of force as you are on the major use of force. Otherwise, you're training officers to do poorly, and then you're criticizing them when they happen to use their firearm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think it's important, Chief. You touched on, actually, you hit on the real nub of the problem. You have to have clear, officers have to have this, top to bottom, clear guidelines. It has to be there in multiple situations that officers find themselves in, when it's appropriate, when it isn't. At least they have to have a working knowledge of that. Then after that, you know, obviously the human factor comes in. Every situation is different, subjective. But you got to have some guidelines, and that's drilled into the training and also the whole indoctrination. And I'm using that in the positive sense of officers coming into the department. Chief, we got about 5 or 6 minutes left. Your thought about this, what in your opinion, what in your, go ahead, Chief, I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to bring up one point. What the failure of, in a lot of instances, is that people believe that the fact that you have guidelines, you've done enough. You must, on a daily basis, insist that people comply with those guidelines.
Right.
You have to take action if they don't. And so it's not enough just to have a set of beautiful policies written on the wall or handed out. Their actions have to meet those requirements, and then the department must take appropriate action when they fall short of those particular guidelines. You just can't write them down. You've got to make sure every day your controls are determining whether they're actually following them.
And that's important. So in other words, one without the other is meaningless. I like what you said, Chief. Yeah. You can have like the Ten Commandments. I mean, on paper, they're beautiful. Yeah. I think the proof, though, is in the follow-up and the enforcement. Chief, you know, if you look
at... I was there as a chief, we dropped shooting 50% in 4 years because we sent a clear message of what was acceptable conduct, what was unacceptable, and what we were not going to tolerate. And officers fell in line knowing that there was certain behavior that was unacceptable. So you can make an impact on those incidents, but you got to make them on the front end, on the minor uses of force, well before they see the benefit on the larger use of force.
Yeah, and it all starts at the top, and that's why it's so important to have proactive leadership and management, which, by the way, leads into my final question, Chief. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're making a decision, just stepping out of your role as a former police chief and a public official, and you're looking at the LAPD, and you have to make a decision. I'm not going to bring in a name, but in general, generic, you have to make a decision about what you want to see going forward in an LAPD chief. What would be, Chief, and we got about 4 minutes left, 3 minutes left, what would be the one, two, maybe three things that you would look for when you are looking at an LAPD chief right now and going forward into the next 5 years? What would you want to see?
I think there's several things you want to see. Is that, number one, it's a job that requires a significant amount of energy and attention to detail. So you certainly need somebody that's willing to put forth that effort. It also requires a person that is willing to continue to grow in the position and to research and see what's going on nationally, internationally, so that they're aware of what the trends are. You need someone that is certainly committed to the community, and this is where I think many times officers and chiefs make a mistake. They believe the discipline system is for the officer. It's not. It's for the community to pass on their grievances, and it's up to the department and those who manage the department to determine if those grievances have been resolved. And so it's the person that has a sensitivity of the community to understand when they are complaining that that's something that you have an obligation to resolve. And then you have to have someone that's willing to share responsibility in the fact that they can't be successful unless the community buys into what's going on, and so it's a joint effort. I think we've used the term community-based policing and misused it more than we use it properly. It's the whole essence of community policing is a partnership in solving problems. It's not you just coming in as a department and saying, I'm going to solve your problem, I'm going to do these things for you. The community has to have a role, and because our expectation is that voluntary compliance with the law is absolutely essential if you're going to be successful as a police department, because you can't arrest if the community chooses not to be law-abiding. You don't have enough resources to
address. 90 seconds.
You must have a partnership, and you must rely on people that are in voluntary compliance of the law. And those are the things you look for in that broad sense of dealing with and managing the department. Not, you know, the best police officer may not be the best chief of police. You need a person that will lead, manage, and understand those responsibilities. And
60 seconds.
You've got 15 council members, a mayor, 5 commissioners, and you have to kind of look at how you can serve all of those interests as it relates to you doing your day-to-day operational job.
All right. Chief, I certainly appreciate, despite all the hitches we had, I appreciate you taking the time out to talk with us today on the Earl of Ari Hutchinson Show. And needless to say, we're going to revisit this issue again. Thanks again, former LAPD Chief Parks and also City Council person Bernard Parks. Thanks for joining us today. Have a good one, Chief Parks.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you. All right, that was former LAPD Chief Bernard Parks, and we're going to be talking a lot about LAPD reform.
10 seconds.
And as you can see, we're wrapping up the show, and we're getting our cue on that. But anyway, thanks again for joining us today on the Earl of Ari Hutchinson Show. This will be rebroadcast tomorrow on Thursday at 5 p.m.
Thank you for using Blog Talk Radio. Goodbye.
Okay.